Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Tuesday, June 30th, 1998. In the Koinonia Creekside this morning is John Paul. Today's session number is 98.1 and it's titled Incarnating the Word in Drama. Let's listen in.
I think I will. I expect people will be coming in here as we go along. My name is John Stephen Paul, and I'm a professor of theater and television arts at Valparaiso University in Northwest Indiana. The university is about 50 miles southeast of Chicago. I happen to be also right now the chairman of the theater department. We have a very complete program of theater studies. We have a university theater that does several plays in the course of a year, and we have an outreach program to schools that does plays based on issues of importance to kids as young as first grade and up through high school. And one of our programs is called Soul Purpose. And part of my job in the last 10 years has been to be the director of Soul Purpose, which is what we call a liturgical drama troupe. And that means that we do plays, usually in the place of sermons on Sunday mornings. In the last 10 years, we've traveled really thousands of miles, mostly on weekends, and in time for Sunday mornings to do a play of 15 to 30 minutes in length in worship service. And we've been probably to about 125 churches over the last 10 years. We call it a liturgical drama troupe. I mean, there are other ways to talk about this. Some groups call themselves chancel drama troupes because they perform in chancels up at the altar. It could be called, I suppose, in a very broad term, religious drama. We call it liturgical drama because we are interested in being part of liturgy, not of doing plays that stand by themselves, but that fit in to a liturgical context, a service. And we try to work with pastors along the way to see how that might be possible. That's such a, I think liturgical is a hard word for a lot of people, so I call these sessions drama for worship. And during the last 2 weeks, I had 11 students here, students at Valparaiso University and recent graduates, and we've been doing our repertoire plays in the Village Center. The response to these plays, and I'm not boasting here at all, but the response to these plays in worship services has been just overwhelmingly positive, not only here at Holden Village, but wherever we go. And when something works that well, you know, you do occasionally sit down and try to ask yourself, well, why is this? You know, what are we doing here that's so interesting? And it evokes such positive response from people. So I've been spending a little time these last couple of weeks thinking about that and asking people. That's what I want to talk about over the course of the next 4 days. And I will lay out my program of these four sessions for you at some point during the day. When I've asked this question and when I've gotten the answers back about why these plays are so interesting and these performances draw such good response, a couple of words keep coming back, a couple of concepts. One is that there is movement in them. We performed here last Friday night, and we did a program about an hour and 20 minutes with no intermission and, in fact, no stops. And we had probably 20 children sitting in the front, just sort of rapt, and their parents would you know, they'd sort of begin there and say, you know, my kid sat there without having his attention attracted or distracted for an hour and 20 minutes, you know, that's how good these are. Well, why is that? Partly it's because the plays have movement in them. We move around a lot. We move around in the chancel area. We move around in the space. And in fact, the words of the plays are generally, the speeches are short. There's not a lot of monologue. We divide them up. So there's a sense that voices are coming from all over the place. That's one thing, movement. And the other is a kind of total experience that the actor gives you. In one of our plays, we talk about loving the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. And that really is what an actor does. If an actor is doing his job or her job properly, he, she is giving you all of his heart, soul, mind, and strength. And when you're in the presence of someone doing that, giving you everything, there's just great power in that moment. In acting, we talk about being in the moment, giving it all. Now, there's a lot more to talk about when it comes to acting theory, and acting theory is very interesting, and actors are very interesting people, because they're not always giving, they're often taking too. and there's that side of the equation. But those two things, movement and the totality of the experience. And so I want to sort of base what it is I'm going to say today on that, in response to those two ideas. And I want to take my cues for this session from two points, two references. The first is this book that we've been using here as a teaching staff, and which the Holden folks have been using as a kind of theme book for this year, Practicing Our Faith. If you have not had a chance to look at this book, or you don't own a copy, I recommend it to you, especially if you have any responsibility in your church for leading discussion or suggesting programming ideas to people. It's just a very good book for thinking about what it means to be a Christian. And thinking about what it means to be a Christian and practicing faith has much to do with doing things, practicing our faith, not thinking about our faith in this book, or discussing our faith, or understanding our faith. All those things are important, but doing it, practicing our faith. And I like just this one little section here that Dorothy Bass, who you know is here as the coordinator of the teaching staff this summer, writes. It's about hospitality, which is the word for this week. Practices, she says, address fundamental human needs and conditions through concrete human acts. Concrete human acts. And then she refers to a little story that's been told in this paragraph. Young men traveling alone do not need to be greeted with a sermon on hospitality. They need to be beckoned inside, given some supper, and shown where to sleep. The hosts may or may not be able to articulate why they do these things, though in fact they are carrying on long traditions rooted in the Bible. They are simply practicing hospitality. And the other practices are like this. They provide concrete help for human flourishing. Each is the human place where people cooperate with God in doing what needs to be done. And especially those of us who work in a university or are in academic context, we spend a lot of time talking. And I don't denigrate that. I guess that's our job. And we sure work on it. Talk. Well, this book is about action. And it's so simply and clearly put that I recommend it to you. The second cue today is one that I'm sure you all know well, but it's where I get the title for this session, Incarnating the Word Through Drama. John 1:14. And the Word became flesh and lived among us. And we've seen his glory, the glory as of a Father's only Son. That's sort of, I think, why John is writing this book. In fact, it's been suggested to me by a New Testament scholar that John really is, in many ways, a dramatist, a playwright. And he's writing, in a sense, a drama about the Word becoming flesh and living among these people so that they could see it. And that is what drama and theater are. Drama comes from the Greek word meaning a thing done. A thing done. And theater comes from a section, actually a part of the Athenian or Greek theater facility called the theatron, or the seeing place. So there is both doing and seeing in drama. The actors are doing, the audience is seeing. We just built a new art center at Belgrade University, and one of the things that we did in design was to put a big word up over the sort of portal, the entrance to each of the spaces, over the music recital hall, we decided to put the word music. And over the art museum, we decided to put the word art. These were not hard choices. But when it came to the theater, we had two words. Do you put in there drama or theater? Did you put up there drama or theater? Well, theater would be perfectly appropriate. And there was a time in my life that I would have fought for that word over drama. Because most of the people are coming in that theater to see things and to participate vicariously. Don't get me wrong. But it's an educational theater. It's a place where students perform. And I wanted the concept of doing things on that portal. I wanted that concept of a thing done to be... more important. And so we use the word drama, which is sort of an older term now, instead of theater. So those two cues, practicing our faith at John 1:14. During the course of these four sessions, I'm going to come back to this particular verse, and I'm going to come back to these words in particular, word, flesh, and lived. And I'm skipping over became, because that's, of course, the great mystery. How does this happen? How did that happen? And maybe I'll talk about that at another time. you can speak to theologians. I'm in theater, not in theology. But I do work with these three words a lot when I work with students in Soul Purpose. Tomorrow we'll talk about how one approaches the Word, how one studies the Bible, to look for the drama in the story as a step toward making a play out of a Bible passage, Bible story. I'll go back to the word flesh here. The Word became flesh. It was Word, there was Word, and now suddenly it has body around it. It has become enfleshed. It has become incarnated. And it lives and walks among us in the person of Jesus Christ. And so we have to, in theater and drama, deal with bodies. That is a stumbling block for a lot of people, I think, when you're dealing with drama and dance in worship. Because for whatever reason, and I suppose I have some ideas about this, the body in our culture still makes us uncomfortable. And I don't want to go any further with that right now, but I think you know I'm right. That when you're starting to deal with your body and all of its imperfections, and you project and look at somebody's beautiful body that doesn't seem to have any imperfections, well, you're not having what you'd usually call religious thoughts. But when you're working with theater and drama, you must deal with the body, and you must work on physical development, and you must focus on those things that are fleshly. And so, you know, this phrase is a great comfort to students of the theater who are also Christians and who understand how important the body was to the promulgation of the word and lived among us. Now, there are of course many ways to live one's life. And I just would like to say just to say a word about that, to make some distinctions here. Our electronic media, and when you come to Holden Village, you have a sense of this, I think, very strongly about having left electronic media behind. I certainly did again. I hadn't been here for about 10 years, and I immediately began to realize how quickly in the morning I turn on the radio, almost before my eyes are all the way open, how quick I am to start to get the morning news on television, and how I can barely go from one room of my house to another without having most of my thoughts taken up, or let's say most of my consciousness filled up by electronic media. This is no great news to anybody that our media, our electronic media, have turned us into a passive, receptive culture, a people. It's happened. And when you're here and you don't have that, there is that feeling, I think, for some of us of about 48 hours of almost panic. You know? Like, gosh, there's no talk coming at me. What's that voice I hear? It's myself. It's my own thoughts. What a weird thing to wake up with in the morning. One of the things that we need to think about in terms of living our life is what it means to live a kind of passive existence, a couch potato existence. Now, that's one way to live here. There are other ways. One is a reflective and contemplative existence, an existence that does not focus on action. And that's certainly a viable and even good way to live at times in your life. And in the university, we teach a kind of critical existence, a critical lifestyle, always analyzing, always questioning, always inquiring. Critical thinking is what we base our curriculum on in the humanities and the arts and in sciences. I think it's all so. That's something that we talk all the time about at universities. Well, the thing about those three—the receptive, the reflective, the critical—they're fine, and I don't mean to criticize them, but they are not drama. They are not theater and drama, which deals with action, which deals with acts. The first theater critic, the philosopher Aristotle, when he was coming up with a definition of drama, said tragedy, as he called it, is an imitation of an action, of a human action, that is serious and complete and of a certain magnitude. Human action put into the form of a play which imitates that action. So that tradition goes way back for us. that's going to be the theme for my sessions. Always looking for the action in whatever it is that we're talking about. And I'd like to now, with your indulgence here and with your cooperation, do some very simple, very low risk exercises that will just illustrate my point about going from the passive to the active. Now, when I say exercises, I don't mean calisthenics. These are not hard, but they are just going to move our muscles a little bit. So, if you could just stand up, please, and push the chair aside. 2, 3, 4. Great, we have an even number right now. So, if anybody decides not to do this, you got to pull somebody out with you. Okay. Make sure you've got about this much space around you. Okay. And let's just do a little bit of a warm-up work here and just start to get our muscles working. We'll just do a simple shoulder roll forward. And try to make your shoulders do the work and not your upper arms, elbows, or lower arms. Forward and reverse back. Okay, and drop your chin on your chest and do a head roll to the right all the way around. Let your head extend backward, left, down, right, backward, left, down, and reverse. Great. Okay, and then we'll just shake a little bit. Start with your right hand and just see if you can isolate your right hand, make it shake, and then start to involve your arm and your elbow and your upper arm and your shoulder. Good. Left. Just your hand first. Lower arm, elbow, upper arm, shoulder, and the other side. Okay, and if you can do that, you're welcome. Okay, good. Alright, now if you could find another person to be with here, preferably somebody you don't know, and also it'd be nice if you could find somebody who's, this is going to be hard for Dave, roughly the same height.
No.
Okay, can you find that? Okay. Now introduce yourselves.
My name is
Fred.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Now face your partner, and this is going to be hard and not hard, but I'm going to ask you to look at your partner. Okay? I'd like you to look at your partner, and from the top of his head or her head, all the way down, try to be as observant as possible about colors and shapes. So there could be a quiz on this later.
All right. Oh, no.
That's right, accessories, ornaments, all these things are important. Okay, got a pretty good look there. All right, now turn your back to your partner. Okay, now, I want you, with your back to your partner, make 3 changes to your appearance. Make 3 changes to your appearance. Okay. Okay? Now turn back around and take turns. Can you identify the three changes your partner made? I just heard somebody say you had more things to change, and in my acting classes, ultimately people start coming with whole layers of clothing. You know, there's just in case this exercise comes up. All right, let's talk about that for a minute. How many of you got all three? Okay. What was that experience like for you? I mean, how did you feel as you were doing that?
Very different.
Very different?
Very different.
Yeah. Why? What?
Well, I don't know. At first, when you're looking at the person, like you said, you know, and you're going over their whole body structure and everything, and you know, you're just getting a picture, and you're like, okay, you know, that's great, you know. And then the next thing you'd probably say was, okay, turn around, and what would that person wear as you were facing him the first time? Well, then when you completely threw us off and saying change around, well, you know, that was like, wow, you know.
A totally
different experience altogether. Yes. That's what I want to say.
I haven't looked far enough. I got from the head down about chest high, and that was it. I didn't get through.
We got to talk.
Yeah.
It's also in the earrings.
It's a cultural pushing on the boundaries, because you're supposed to do a quick glance in America and not stare.
Right.
And so that was pushing the limits.
Yeah, you know, in our society, looking at people either means you want to fight them or you want to pick them up, come on to them, you know? And that's what it's come to in the city. In the cities, I mean, you cannot, in New York, you cannot look at anybody down the street. So that's exactly right. I think our culture is starting to teach us to look to the side. Rarely do we have permission actually to look. Okay, good. Now, you've got your partner there, and now turn to your partner. And we're going to do something I'm sure some of you have done before. We're going to do some mirror exercises, okay? But I want them for a very a specific reason here. So between the two of you, choose one person to be the actor and one person to be the mirror. Okay?
Okay.
Okay.
I have no idea.
All right, so begin with your feet about, say, maybe a foot or 18 inches apart, however you feel comfortable. Make sure your knees are bent a little bit. All right, and begin with your hands on your hips. Now, actors, we're going to begin by doing with the right hand some slow, curvilinear movements with the right hand. Okay? Just move your right hand all around the possible ways it could go in its circle. And mirrors are going to try to mirror you. Okay? That means they're going to use their left hand. All right? You're looking into a mirror, you should see them coming back. Now, you have to maintain eye contact. That's the hard part. Only use peripheral vision, all right? Okay, so let's start together. Hands on your hips first, okay? Establish eye contact. Ready, actors, begin. Gradual, curvilinear,
Well, that's an amazing graduate.
Don't talk.
Yeah, talk.
No talking. Try to maintain eye contact. Okay, now don't stop, but change leaders. Don't stop, change leaders. Now the mirror is the actor and the actor is the mirror.
That's pretty good.
Okay, don't stop, but leaders, add your other arm now. Change leaders. Okay, leaders, add some more of your body. Add some more of your body. Good. Maintain eye contact.
Oh, sorry.
Let's see. Change leaders.
Can't remain eye deck.
Think mirror. Good. Okay, now, let's just talk about that for a moment, okay? Let's talk about that experience. Why is it fun?
Well, it was fun watching the other person and being in communion with that person.
You're one step ahead.
Sort of.
Didn't you grow up in this country? Why aren't you competitive? How come you're not trying to trick your mirror?
I noticed that after a while that, at first you were going, oh, how can I look at the person and also do the movements? But after a while, it's more natural to be able to.
You just get used to the activity, yeah.
Seemed to be harder to maintain contact when you were copying than when you were having to think, when you were a little distracted. Mm-hmm. It was a little easier to, because it was sort of like you weren't as totally focusing. It was harder to be the copier.
It was harder to be the mirror?
Yeah.
Throughout?
Towards the end it got easier, but it felt like, because when you were the leader, you had some control. And you also were busy, yeah. So you were kind of looking at the other person, but you also were real busy, so you were so focused.
Yeah.
There's a certain release you feel when you get beyond the uncomfortableness of looking someone else straight in the eye and then start to really concentrate. Mm-hmm. And once you hit that concentration level, then it's okay.
Yeah.
Because you're not thinking anymore about how uncomfortable you are looking at someone.
Yeah. Okay, now we don't have much time for this, but I'd like to just try one, the same exercise, but I'm going to give you some different cues this time, okay? I won't rule out the next thing, but... All right, so decide who's going to start. Actor or mirror. Okay, and begin. Whoever is the leader begins the movement, okay? Just start mirroring. Now, this time, maintain eye contact, but actors, start to think how you can help your mirror to mirror you. Help your mirror to mirror you. Change leaders. Add a little more of the body. Help your mirror to mirror you. Change leaders. help your mirror to mirror you. And now you're on your own. No leader, no follower, just do it. No leader, no follower, just do it. Keep mirroring. But I'm not telling you who's going to lead and who's going to follow.
Oh, okay.
Try to involve as much of your body as you can.
I'm bleeding here.
Don't ask that question. Don't be afraid of change. Okay. Alright, so how was that?
We were like us.
Did you?
Yes, we did. She would get an idea and I would follow her, and then I'd get an idea and she would follow me.
Did any of you feel like you were maybe starting to forget about the whole concept of leading and following, and you were just doing it?
It seemed like we moved slower because we were thinking about becoming one.
Yeah. When that starts to happen, it's not, you come out of the questioning. Who's leading, who's following. Can you just move more from the body and in response across from body to body? And the action there is to help your mirror mirror you. When you do this with kids, especially, and I'm even talking about college students, it's very, there's always a step here where it becomes competitive. They're trying to be a better actor than their mirror can possibly keep up with. Or they're going to mirror that actor no matter what she does. Okay? And it's a focus on them rather than on the other person. When you can get to that oneness, you're on the edge of ensemble. Or you're coming into what we call ensemble in the theater. And that's the goal, is to try to get all the actors working together as one. All right, so what I wanted to show there, what I wanted to do there was to start to get you just in a little way into your body and out of your mind, and to begin thinking about what it means to move out of a confrontational situation, which in this country we often think of when there are two people, it's me versus you, beginning toward a kind of oneness. Now I would like to look, we have about 20 minutes left here, and I want to look at Zacchaeus' story in Luke chapter 19. I mark those, they can get them all marked. I wanted to work with Zacchaeus today because of the hospitality theme. The story of Zacchaeus, I think one very good take on it is it's a story about hospitality. I'd like to read it through first, together, 19:1 through 10. And as we read it, I'd like you to think about the things that Zacchaeus and other characters in this story are doing. okay? Try not to think about what the lesson of this story is, or what we should know coming out of it. See if you can focus on the people who are in the story and what they're actually doing. It's really one long paragraph, isn't it, from 1 through 10. So I will read it, okay? And you see if you can focus on the actions. He entered Jericho and was passing through it. A man was there named Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was rich. He was trying to see who Jesus was, but on account of the crowd, he could not, because he was short in stature. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore tree to see him, because he was going to pass that way. When Jesus came to the place, he looked up and said to him, "Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for I must stay at your house today." So he hurried down and was happy to welcome him. All who saw it began to grumble and said, "He has gone to be the guest of one who is a sinner." Zacchaeus stood there and said to the Lord, "Look, half of my possessions, Lord, I will give to the poor, and if I have defrauded anyone of anything, I will pay back four times as much." Then Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, because he too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek out and save the lost." All right, now I'd like to go back here and think about and focus on the verbs in this story. Just the verbs. And the action verbs if we can. Alright? So let's go through them. They don't have to necessarily be in order, but what action verbs do you find here?
Entered.
Okay, he entered.
Entered in passing.
Tax collector.
Verbs now. Actions.
Trying to see.
He was trying to see, okay.
Ran and climbed. Looked, said. Hurried. Come down.
Grumble. Yeah. Did somebody say said there?
Yeah, said that. Stood and said.
Stood and said.
Will give.
Okay, now let's think about that for a moment. Well, we'll put that over here. Okay? Any other ones?
Pay. Give to the poor. Give.
Mm-hmm. Pay.
Paired with those that have defrauded. Past tense.
Do we have king? We have king. Claim king. Now, Jesus came to the place.
Came to see.
Have to come. Yeah, okay.
Has come down.
Has gone.
What's that? All the neighbors say. Right.
He has gone to the king.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Now let's just pull these out a little bit.
Was happy.
These are all action verbs here. He entered Jericho, was passing through. A man was there named Zacchaeus. He was a tax collector and was rich. He was trying to see who Jesus was, but on account of the crowd, he could not because he was short in stature. So he ran ahead and climbed the sycamore tree to see him because he was going to pass that way. When Jesus came to the place, he looked up and said. Now, saying is certainly something that one does, but within that phrase, there's another verb. Okay? Saying is not the kind of action verb we'd like to work with in the theater. When Jesus says to him, "Weep there."
Speaking?
Yeah. Let's try to get out of the
He is inviting himself to Zacchaeus' house.
Right, he's invited, okay? Now, what does that do for us when we think, when we come out of the speaking and the saying and into a verb like invite? Opens up that, it really opens up the saying there, the word, the speech. We find an action in there. The neighbors, well, let's go to Zacchaeus' last speech in which he says, I will give to those people who I've defrauded. What's he doing there? What's the action verb in that last speech of Zacchaeus's?
Repent.
Change.
Repents. All right, that's interesting, yes.
To promise.
Can you think of any other ones there?
I said changing. About face.
Yeah.
Change.
All right. See, when we would talk to actors, we would say, saying is such a broad category. Well, how do I say it? Actors would ask us. And we would say back to them, well, really what's happening in this speech for all these nice words is the action of repent, to turn around, to change. Now, that's something an actor can play. Saying is harder for an actor to work with because they need to know the next question. All right, now think of all these actions in here, and you begin to see this story full of action. It's not just something being said or being taught. It becomes a kind of a very active drama. And I'm going to be rushing ahead here a little bit because I want to show you how we in Soul Purpose work. I brought some copies along of our play, Zacchaeus. And I don't have enough for everybody, but let's make sure everybody gets a chance to look at one.
Are you using more mind actions in your drama?
Nope. No, we use, this is a very active play, you'll see.
What about when Jesus said salvation, whatever else?
Yeah,
said,
well, what about it? What's the action there?
Pronounces, declares.
Yeah. Announces the salvation of this man. Announces still one of those words. What does he do? He gathers Zacchaeus in at that point. The one person in the town that they just despise. He takes him into his arms. And so when if you were going to do a play about Jesus meeting Zacchaeus, and you didn't want to, and you want to be able to tell an actor what to do at that point. Well, if you're going to gather Zacchaeus into yourself, we need to have a hug there, Jesus. We need to have you hug Zacchaeus. What a shocking thing for those neighbors to see. Okay, now just gonna offer this as an example today. You have a little prologue there, and we're gonna skip past that. And in this play, we begin with kind of a famous song. Okay. Now, if you don't mind, I'd like to distribute these parts. So, Dave, if you would read Zacchaeus, and what is your name?
June.
June. Okay, June. You read the servant. Okay. June. And all of us together will read the chorus parts. Aunt, would you read Sarah? Okay. And what's your name?
Aunt,
would you read Jesus, please? And actually, I think that gets us through most of it. And if we all read the chorus together, we'll make a play here. And we have to begin by singing this song. Perhaps you know it. Ready? Zacchaeus was a little man. Zacchaeus was a wee little man, a wee little man was he. He climbed up in a sycamore tree for the Lord he wanted to see. For the Lord he wanted to see. For the Lord he wanted to see. For the Lord he wanted to see.
for the Lord he wanted to see.
Know that song? Sure you do. I bet you even sung it at church camp or Sunday school or on a bus or around the supper table. I hate that song. Zacchaeus was a wee little man, a wee little... They're singing about me! Zacchaeus was... Nice name, don't you think? My mother named me. Zacchaeus means pure, clean. You didn't know that, did you? Now, where is my servant Sirius? Sirius!
And we sing again. Zacchaeus was a wee little man.
That's what you know about me. That's what they're singing about. Thanks to the sainted historian Luke, you know three things about me. First,
he's a wee little man.
I'm short. I'm the most famous short guy in the Bible. Come to think of it, I'm the only short guy in the Bible, at least that I know of. So now I have to hear about it forever. No one calls me by the name my mother gave me, Zacchaeus. No, it's, hey, shorty. Not to my face, mind you. No, to my face, it's
your worship.
Or
my Lord.
Or
your honor.
Why? Not because they worship, respect, or honor me. No.
They hate him. They detest him.
They address me so because I'm the chief tax collector and I'm rich. And that's the second thing you know about me. I'm rich, especially at tax time. And it's always tax time.
Okay, and then the hat is passed around to all of us in the chorus, and we have to put our tax money in to get to this despicable person who's constantly taking our money from us. But he says,
not to worry, I've learned to live with it. In fact, I built a big house, a mansion, on the edge of town with walls so thick I can't hear them.
Husband.
Call me Zacchaeus.
I shall no longer go to the market, at least not during tax time.
It's always tax time.
Exactly.
Sarah, what is upsetting you? What happened at the market?
It's too embarrassing. Even with my heavy veil, they know who I am, the tax collector's wife. They say such vile things. They call you names. They accuse you of names that can't possibly be true. They sing this insipid song.
I know the song! Sarah, never mind them. They can't hurt us. Sticks and stones. We're safe here in our house.
But we have no friends. I have no one to talk to. And this house, the walls are so thick I can't breathe. Let's move far, far away.
You're not talking sense. Where would we move? Jericho, the town of my father and his father and his father. Besides, the pickings, the percentages are so good here. We have everything we want. Sarah. The paper says that the strange rabbi from Nazareth is coming to town today. I'm going out to see him. If you like, I'll stop at the market on the way home. Are we in need?
And she gives him a very long list.
Now there's a story about the everyday trials and tribulations of a tax collector and his wife becomes a lot more serious.
And the chorus sings, and as the Savior passed his way, he looked up in a tree and said, Zacchaeus, you come down, for I'm coming to your house today, for I'm coming to your house today.
And this is why I hate this song so, because it makes a mockery of the most important day of my life. The Nazarene preacher had finally made it as far south as our fair city, and
he entered Jericho and was passing through it.
A man was there named Zacchaeus. He was the chief tax collector and was rich. He was trying to see who Jesus was. But on account of the crowd, he could not, because he was short in stature.
So I ran ahead and climbed a sycamore tree to see him, because he was going to pass this way. And that's the third thing you know about me. I climbed a sycamore tree because I wanted to see Jesus. Well, who wouldn't? The man's reputation preceded him, and you know the saying, seeing is believing.
When Jesus came to the place, he looked up to him and said,
Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for I must stay at your house today.
For I must stay at your house today.
You can't be serious.
But I am serious.
What? Oh, I... Never mind. This Jesus is coming here?
Yes, today, this afternoon, for dinner.
All who saw it began to grumble and said, unbelievable. Of all the people in town, how could the rabbi go to this man's house? This tells me plenty. You know the old question, can anything good come out of Nazareth? The answer is no. No good person would go into the house of that extortionist, that collaborator, that shmageddon. He has gone to be the guest of one who is a sinner. The word sinner is too mild for me. I heard that when old Ezra asked for a loan of some money for the tax, Shorty offered to borrow Ezra's daughter in return. How can you work in that house?
It has been good to be with you in your house, Zacchaeus. The food you have provided will sustain us on the journey to Jerusalem.
Half of my possessions, Lord, I will give to the poor, and if I have defrauded anyone of anything, I will pay back four times as much. If you please, Lord, accept this of me.
Today, salvation has come to this house, because he too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek out and to save the lost.
Thank you. Now, what would you say that the dramatization has brought, how is it different from a reading of the text? What has it brought out of the text?
It came alive.
And what do you mean by that?
It's as if you were there.
Different voices. The emotion behind the voices.
It's brought action to, more action to just reading of it. It's maybe put more action into the body function of the actors or whatever.
But it has language is different. The language is different.
The language is different. Yeah. And
everyday language.
Everyday language. Do you feel comfortable with that, that the language is different? Notice now there's some language that's not different at all, right? Did you notice that? Because what we've done here is to incorporate the actual gospel text into it so that when we do this in the church, people do hear the gospel story.
But you added the dialogue about going to the market and how everybody's talking about her, and she doesn't want to be. I mean, that's not...
And reading it in the Bible, it was good, but it was a little choppy to me. And as a play, it flows.
Well, in the Bible reading, you don't actually get Jesus to Zacchaeus' house. He changes right there at their first meeting. And I like to think that this happened after Jesus went to Zacchaeus' house, that they did have that time.
He didn't go to the house in the Bible story.
It doesn't give you.
He says he's going.
And Zacchaeus seems to do his repentance based on the invitation. That's if you just did a close reading of it, that's what would come out of it.
Huh. Although even in this play, you don't dramatize the dialogue or what happened at the house, whatever. It's still this very quick thing. But I think the difference is that you've begun to know Zacchaeus.
And how do you respond to Zacchaeus now? What feelings do you think he has? Do you get to know him a little better? What do you know about him?
He's greedy.
Yeah, we knew that before.
And doesn't care what the other people think. Going to keep right on doing it.
Nobody. Do you have?
It was kind of nice to his wife, though. He offered to give stuff in the market.
He must be fairly honest because he promised to pay all this back.
But what happened that was significant to me? It's like when they finally met and in Zacchaeus' house. It was like Jesus touching the woman at the well touching Jesus' robe. It was that physical contact
that brought about the change of heart for him.
But before, like when I read a story like that, the woman is a very sympathetic character, you know, because even the just the narrative will, you know, say this poor woman had this flow of blood, you know, and you sort of identify with her. Whereas the Zacchaeus gospel lesson, he's just a short guy who climbs a tree. But what the play does is he makes him human. You know, he's got a wife. Sure, he's a tax collector and he's rich and he cheats people, but, you know, he's got to make a living. You know, he's got a nice house.
He has these feelings about his ancestry that she'd like to leave, but he says, no, this is... And the fact that he's cheating the same people he doesn't want to leave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when we did this play at Velpo, when we had got students together to talk about the story, there happened to be a student in our midst, not the people who were sitting talking about the story, but someone that we all knew, and the students just despised him. He was a person who, because he understood how to run the technology of the theater, would use that and would corner people with it. Well, if you would like to learn how to run the soundboard, then you'll do this for me. And doing this for me ranged all the way from even up to sexual favors. I mean, it was really the worst kind of harassment. They hated this guy. And what I said to them, okay, now let's think of it this way. Jesus comes to Del Rio, Indiana, and who does he go to the cafeteria with? This guy. And it just cracked this story open like a walnut for us. And when you're writing a play, when you're doing a drama, you have to look at all the characters because everybody has a whole life on stage. Not only Jesus and Zacchaeus, but the other, if you're going to make a play out of it, everybody has a whole life. Everybody is conflicted. Everybody has desires and conflicts. Well, it's 11:30.
Can you comment just a little bit on the serious?
When you're writing a play, you've got to have a way to get the characters to be able to talk to one another. So sometimes you have to invent characters just so that somebody has a way of speaking. We call that a confidant. But also, there is a tradition in the theater called Commedia dell'arte, which was an Italian improvisational clown show, came out of the 16th and 17th centuries in Italy, and it always had funny servants in it. So what I wanted to do was to find both the humor and the seriousness in the Zacchaeus story to make it work in both ways, and maybe tomorrow or you can look at the play later, it turns completely around at the end and it becomes a very serious story that ends at the foot of the cross. But I just thought it would be wonderful to be able to have some of the kind of quick movement of the funny clown, and then it was just a joke to call him serious so that we could play around with those words.